Hello and welcome to a Brexit-dedicated Bruin podcast where we speak to political editor of the Sunday Times, Tim Shipman. In the conversation, we cover cabinet strains, leadership threats, Labour Party red lines, and ultimately how the cards may fall on the Brexit deal. And on that note, here is just a short clip of what Tim learned this week.
A European ambassador said to me earlier this week, what Britain is now seeking is the softest possible hard Brexit.
Okay, for some more colour on that comment and the full conversation, please keep listening. But first, here are our disclaimers.
We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Bruin Dolphin.
Hello everyone and welcome to a politically focused Bruin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Head of Fund Research, and today we are delighted to welcome the political editor of the Sunday Times, Tim Shipman.
We'll be looking at domestic politics, and not least on the basis that Tim is an author on this subject, having written the all-out war following the sort of the inside story of the referendum campaign. And then the follow-up fallout, no surprises what that was about, as Theresa May took on a rather problematic general election and then trying to battle with a Brexit deal. And I think there's a third book in the offing, isn't there, Tim, about how Brexit goes up to 2019, so a trilogy.
That is the plan, Ben. Though some people suggest it might take four, five, or six books.
Whether a trilogy is going to be enough. There's surely some more twists and turns.
It will be enough for me. Let's put it
okay. Well, I think what we want to do then is try and speculate as to what might appear in that third book. I mean, the latest narrative is that Brexit is getting softer and softer, and those more hard Brexiteers are sort of being starved of oxygen and are gently being sort of squeezed out. Do you think this is sort of Theresa May's strategy all along, was to delay the process until it became too late really to do anything dramatic?
Well, that's the ultimate question in British politics, and you ask people in Downing Street and in the Brexit department constantly, is this a plan or is this just where we've ended up? And I think the way to square the circle is to say that Theresa May's plan was a process. What she believes in is not particularly ideas and end state goals. It's about how you do something. That's what she sort of has made a virtue of as a minister and as a prime minister, is having this sort of laborious process where everybody looks at all the details and tries to come to a workable, pragmatic conclusion. That's her religion. She's a sort of provincial, pragmatic vicar's daughter who wants to come to what she thinks is a sort of workable solution. She believes she's got to deliver on the referendum result, but she also believes she needs to do it in a way that doesn't harm the country. And I think as a result of that failed general election and that belief in process, that's how we've ended up where we are. I don't think it's necessarily a sort of driving, passionate belief of Theresa May's that this is where we should have ended up, but her belief in doing it the way she has meant that's where we have ended up.
And what do you think the direction of travel is for the plan? I mean, there are still lots of iterations on how this sort of customs partnership or other method, how the cards may fall. But do you think there is, she has a plan and she's just trying to win perhaps the Brexiteers over now at this late stage?
Well, look, two quotes which I think try to sort of explain what the heck's going on in a way that I have found useful. A European ambassador said to me earlier this week, what Britain is now seeking is the softest possible hard Brexit, if that makes sense. It's the thing that it leaves us closest to the EU whilst still out of it and still technically out of the single market and the current existing customs union. I think we'll have a transitional deal where very little changes, and at the end of it we'll have some kind of customs partnership that leaves us effectively for goods but not services inside something that looks very like the current customs union. They will have a fig leaf for the Brexiteers that is not the end state, and that they will pursue these other options. The winning option looks like it will be this thing called maximum facilitation, where you are outside the customs union but have some kind of sort of technical or procedural niceties that allow you to say you're not there. Ultimately, but the EU currently says that doesn't work, and until such time as they do accept it, that's only something we can come to in the future. The backstop is that we're effectively staying in these organisations.
So sort of a never-ending transition until the EU gets comfortable with technology?
Yeah, that seems to be the way it's going. Though the caveat to all that is that, you know, we're speaking at a time when David Davis is threatening to resign over this whole idea of never-ending. The Brexiteers in Cabinet a month or so ago agreed that it would not be never-ending. There would be an end state. There would be an end date. But Theresa May said, yeah, that's fine, we'll have that. But when she wrote it all down, there was no actual date written in these things. There was an assumption that there'll be an end point to that process, but none has yet been set. And it's very difficult to see how one currently could be set, because the rest of the EU says, well, this stuff doesn't work yet. And they will be the guardians of whether or not it's acceptable. We can have our own view on that, but ultimately they would have to go along with it as well. And until such time as they do, we're pretty much stuck in near-Earth orbit, I think.
Well, I mean, and also there's no small matter in terms of that duration for that idea to play out of a general election here in the UK. I mean, there is a time limit on how much Parliament can serve, and I don't know what sort of direction of travel you think the Labour Party are heading, but that looks more and more like a staying in the single market type policy.
I think that they'll stop short of actually saying they want to be in the single market, for the reason that if Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell were to win, that the things they want to be able to do as a sort of red in tooth and claw socialist government would be illegal under some of the single market rules. So they will get as close to saying they want to be in that as possible, setting impossible hurdles for the government to clear, whilst not quite committing to it. They've put down an amendment to the withdrawal bill, which sort of says we want the benefits of the single market without being in it. That's a bit of a victory for Keir Starmer, the shadow Brexit secretary, because he is keen to be in the single market and he's gradually manoeuvring the Labour Party in that direction. But I think most of the people I talk to anywhere near Jeremy Corbyn's office think that he won't take that ultimate step of saying we want to be in the single market, because that would tie his hands if he were to win power.
And one of the things that might bring a general election around sooner than anticipated, or I don't know, in political circles maybe it is predicted to be not to run the full term, would be a Brexit deal perhaps that didn't satisfy the Jacob Rees-Mogg and the ERG, and a leadership challenge ensued. Do you think perhaps not now, but at around the turn of the year, when we get something like a blueprint for this current government's plan, that it's unlikely to satisfy that quarter of the Conservative Party and a leadership challenge sort of ensues?
I think it's entirely possible. I mean, I get calls every week from people threatening to put their letters in. 48 MPs need to write to the chairman of the 1922 committee to bring about a vote of confidence. That doesn't get you a leadership election. And a lot of people think that at the moment, if that came about, Theresa May would fight it and win quite comfortably. But there are several dates which are important. The first is when the withdrawal bill itself gets royal assent, because that means we're legally leaving the EU. And at that point, the Brexiteers will think, well, they've at least got the sort of basics in the bag, and they might think at that point that it would be better to have one of their own finalising the deal. Again, post-March, once we've actually left, a lot of people say, you know, that could lead to crunch time. You know, so far, an obvious successor has not presented themselves, and Theresa May has survived as a consequence, and fear of Jeremy Corbyn taking over amongst Conservative MPs has meant that they haven't pulled the trigger. I think fear of Corbyn is somewhat receding, though not entirely, and I think people like Michael Gove and Sajid Javid in particular, but possibly Boris Johnson and some of the younger people, are putting themselves in a position where they are more viable to their colleagues. So as each of those things happen, a leadership election becomes more likely. I think May is determined to sort of prove all these silly men wrong and go on as long as possible. And in her mind, that means fighting the next election. But I think there's a pretty strong consensus view across the Conservative Party that they don't want her leading them into a campaign. As Chris Patton, the former Tory chairman, said, you know, putting her at the front and centre of the last election campaign was a bit like, you know, someone who's frightened of the media and doesn't like projecting, you know, her ideas to the public. Putting them front and centre was a bit like having an open heart surgeon who's frightened of the sight of blood, and they don't want to go down that road again.
I mean, there is, that is one side of the equation, if you like, to see the end of Theresa May. I mean, we just sort of wonder. You are moving the political circles. You know what her morale is like. I mean, it must be an extremely, there's very rare personality traits to have sort of put up with what she's had to sort of put up with and continue to want to see this through. I mean, what are the chances that she sort of resigns? I mean, is that just a negligible possibility?
I think that's almost unthinkable because of the character and personality of Theresa May. She is someone who believes in, you know, Churchill's dictum that you keep buggering on, and if you're going through hell, you keep going, and that's what she's done. There have been undeniably three or four moments where she might have walked, and at least two of them, my understanding is, her husband talked her around and said, look, you know, you need to go out with your head held high, which means delivering this stuff and proving people wrong. I don't think she'll walk away. But equally, if people made strong enough representations that she should go, I think she would, if she felt she'd done the basics of what she wanted to do, I don't think she'd probably fight it at that point. And, you know, my second book is full of, you know, that week after the general election was a pretty brutal time, and the time around the party conference was another pretty brutal time. It would be astonishing if she were sort of psychologically intact, and it's very clear to me from talking to a lot of people around her that she went through, you know, two pretty major personal crises. Credit to her, she's come through them. But I think most people in the Tory party who watch her closely or sit in her cabinet think she is a hollowed out figure. And while they admire her determination and the fact that she just keeps getting on with it, they do think she is, you know, to some degree, you know, sort of damaged by it and hunkers down. And, you know, it makes her unwilling to take the risks that they would like to see her take, or, you know, project the vision that they'd like to see her project.
And, I mean, you mentioned the David Davis story earlier, and I know this is sort of very unfair because things can move very fast in politics, but I mean, what sort of fallout would there be from that type of headline figure, key figure, stepping away from the cabinet? I mean, that is a real show of intent, if you like, that it would be the softest possible hard Brexit, to coin the phrase you said earlier.
Well, it would depend on the sort of scope of it. It's quite hard for me to see how, if David Davis were to resign, how Steve Baker and Suella Braverman, who are the other two hard Brexiteers who are ministers in that department, could stay as well. I can't see how they could, any of them could stay in those circumstances. And once you've walked out in that way, what would be the point of doing it if you didn't then try to bring down the Prime Minister as well? Because at that point, the tone of Brexit would be set, as far as those people are concerned. So I suspect it would have pretty widespread repercussions. And, you know, in terms of the public at large, you know, David Davis is one of those cabinet ministers who people have actually heard of and know what job they've got. And I think, you know, Theresa May has lost quite a number of cabinet ministers over the last sort of 9 months, but that would be somewhat, by some distance, the most serious departure.
So if we sort of round out then this conversation with the most sort of dangerous and speculative element of the conversation, trying to ask you, knowing that political predictions are fraught with risk, you know, what
they
would
don't
be,
have a great track record well, they don't over have the a last 3 years. No.
What would be your core scenario, even though perhaps it's not a, you know, an 80% probability, you know, maybe a 30%, but it's still the most likely of a whole range of things that could happen in terms of how Brexit unfolds and how this government keeps itself together and perhaps when the next general election might be?
Well, let's state this with, say, a 52% probability, okay, shall we, which is a number that we know gets the job done. The most likely outcome is that Theresa May survives the June summit and finds some way of placating David Davis in the meantime. And then there's a huge ding-dong over the summer. In October, we pay the money and we leave in exchange for a piece of paper that says this is what your future trade deal might look like. If you're able to negotiate it over the next couple of years, we'll have a 2-year transition during which not much will change. And at the end of it, we'll have some kind of customs arrangement with the promise of something in the future at a point yet to be determined. That all assumes that the Brexiteers will not bring the house crashing down. At that point, I think Theresa May breathes a sigh of relief. She gets herself to March, and I think if she's sensible, she'll give some indication that, yes, right, the important bits of Brexit are now done. I've got two or three things I'd really like to achieve as Prime Minister, and I think she could buy herself a year's grace at that point. If she's sensible, she'll do a reshuffle that promotes rather than sidelines people who might make a good leader of the Conservative Party. And we'll then have quite an interesting period where the runners and riders offer themselves and we'll see who's best. I think if she doesn't do that and she signals next spring that she wants to cling on, then I think the party conference of 2019 will be a bloodbath and you'll see the Conservative Party from all its wings, not just the sort of Rees-Mogg wing, decide that they need someone to take them into the future.
OK, well, thanks so much for sparing the time, Tim. Really appreciate those insights. As I mentioned, you've got those books out, All Out War and Fallout. Are the other ways we can follow you, obviously, the Sunday Times and Twitter.
I'm available at Shippers Unbound on Twitter, which is normally my first outlet for thoughts.
OK, great. Well, thanks again, Tim. We really appreciate those valuable insights. And yeah, to our listeners, thanks very much for listening. Let us know what you think on Twitter, referencing hashtag Bruin Podcast. Leave us a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. And until next time, many thanks for listening.